So I'll say, hey folks, Boker Tov, Shabbat Shalom, welcome back. Good morning. Let's talk about this portion, which is a reasonably short portion. It's also one of those that seems to be a bit problematic, and every year when we get to this portion and the next one, I tend to talk about them and ask questions, because really they raise more questions than they do answers. For example, what is this thing? As I pointed out last night, and I point out every year, it is not, repeat, not exclamation point, underline, it is not leprosy that's being talked about. Leprosy, sometimes called Hansen's disease, is a very different thing, and leprosy still exists. As far as most people, most of the rabbis have pointed out, most medical authorities point out, this malady, this plague, this negah, has not been seen on the planet for at least 1,000 years, probably the better part of 2 millennia. And some say it was, during the time of Yeshua. Well, obviously it's not exactly during the time of Yeshua. There were lepers after that as well. Some of the rabbis try to claim that it seems to have disappeared about the time that the Second Temple was destroyed. So we don't have exact records, can't make the claim one way or another. I do find the debate kind of interesting, but bottom line is real simple. We haven't seen whatever this stuff is that's called Zara'at in the Hebrew, and I'm going to use that terminology, even though as I'm looking at most of the English, every now and then I'll slip, you'll hear me say leper, oops, because that's not what it says in the original. Just remember, that's an English affectation, because we don't know what the disease really was. It hasn't been seen in any of our lifetimes. So let's talk about some of the specifics here, because one of the questions that I always want to ask is why. And as you know, and I will I'll mention this, I won't go into a lot of detail. Some years I spend more time on it than others. The specifics in the Torah portion are kind of they're almost graphic, right? We got all this description of areas in the skin and open boils and baldness and hair and what color the hair are and whether the skin is depressed or not and how if it looks like it might be, you shut the person up and see what happens for 7 days and then the Kohen looks and then maybe he gets shut up for another 7 days. But there are a couple things that emerge even through all the detail. And I'm going to go through some summaries this morning to kind of set the stage and then ask some questions, I think with a little bit different take than I have in some years past, as to why we haven't seen this and what it might mean and why it was probably a blessing. This I have talked about in years past, that this thing was around, because it looks like in the absence of Zara'at, the things that it may have been controlling, like the evil tongue, lying speech, and a lot of not just gossip, but things that go beyond gossip, have gotten so much worse than probably, I'd even go so far as to say, ever before in human history. Now we have massive control, Orwellian speech processes, controls, ministries of truth, propaganda agencies, lying, rewriting of history, you name it, folks. If it's lying tongues, we got masters of it now that are in high places, to the point where where have we heard this? They call evil good and good evil, and they seem really proud of it, too. So Let's go with this. Again, so much detail. I said I would start with a bit of a summary. One of the things that is key is that it's the Kohen, it's the priest that declares. And I tell the old joke last night, I won't make you sit through that again, but basically it ain't nothing till he declares what it is. Okay, is it or is it not? Well, when the Kohen declares that it's Zara'at, then the person who has it is called a Metzora, a person who has Zara'at. So a Metzora has Zara'at. And the priest essentially declares clean and unclean. So he declares them to be clean, and he declares them to be unclean. It ain't nothing till he says so. And I think it's kind of fascinating. I want to start with this, too. A couple places in Scripture where we see a number of references. And let's go with this one, because it's kind of interesting. If you do a word search in various Bible versions and ask, like where I'm going to go first, there are two places that you'll see this, but there's a longer list, and the list is kind of fascinating. So let's turn to a couple places in the book of Ezekiel, the prophet, where it talks about what is the duty of the priest. What is the priest supposed to do? Well, and in one case, he says, my priests, my Kohenim, they have failed to do the following. In the other case, he says they're supposed to. So here's Ezekiel 22:26 first, where the judgments, the statutes, the ordinances, they haven't done these things. These people, he says, and this is part of the judgment of the prophet, they've despised my judgment. They did not walk in my statutes. They profaned my Sabbath. Sounds a bit like, well, modern American and the whore church, right? Their heart went after their idols, their bunnies, their eggs, their Christmas trees, right? We've done all of that. And he says, don't do it. But they say, now the hell with God of the Bible, we're going to do it anyway. Nevertheless, now this is kind of fascinating, my eye spared them from destruction. I didn't make an end of them right there in the wilderness. But I said to their children in the wilderness, do not walk after the ways, after the statutes, the so-called laws of your fathers. Do not observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. How's that for a repetition in human history? Happens over and over again, still is. I am Yahuwah your El. Walk in my statutes, keep my judgments, do them, hallow my Sabbaths. This will be a sign, an oath between me and you, that you may know, oh, have we heard this, right? Ki ani Yahuwah, I am Yahuwah your El. Notwithstanding, nope, they didn't listen. They rebelled against me, he said. They did not walk in my statutes. They were not careful to observe my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. Instead, they profaned my Sabbaths. Hell, he's talking about the Catholic, no, the whole whore church. Wait a minute, this predates them. And people say, well, that's, you can't prove that that's the whore church. No, don't even say that word. We are offended by calling the fact that we don't keep your Sabbaths, we don't walk in your ways, we don't do your judgments, we don't give a damn about your Moedim. We're offended that you call us the whore church for that little triviality. How do you know we're the descendants of the whore church? Answer, read the book. Read what he says. Here it is. They profaned my Sabbaths. Then I said I'd pour out my fury on them and fulfill my anger against them in the wilderness. Now, he fulfilled his anger later. This is what Ezekiel's talking about here. When he exiled Ahola and Aholibah, both whoring wives, northern kingdom, southern kingdom, Judah and Israel, whore church and whore synagogue, all of them, still in exile, by the way. Also, he says, verse 23 in Ezekiel 22, I raised my hand in an oath to those Bamidbar in the wilderness, that I would do what? Well, exactly what's been done, and they still are. I would scatter them among the Goyim, the nations, and disperse them throughout all the countries, all over the place, because they had not executed my judgments, but had despised my statutes, and profaned my Sabbaths, and their eyes were fixed on their father's idols. Father's idols, isn't that funny? You mean the guys wearing the little clerical collars with the fancy robes? Their idols, their little shrines and all that kind of stuff. No, he's talking about the predecessors. These are the sons and the sons of the fathers and their idols. Therefore, I also gave them up to statutes that were not good. Still, that's the case. Judgments by which they could not live. Fish on Fridays, and all kinds of other things. And yeah, folks, if you can't read this, I will suggest and see the indictments that were against the people that Ezekiel is talking directly to, and those who are the descendants of those that he was talking directly to. Remember what Yeshua said? I have come but to the lost tribes, the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then he was asked later, are you going to return them yet? Nope. Answer, they're still not returned today. So what, he says. Now, this is fascinating. Listen to this. Think of it in the context of Tazria, the Torah portion this week, the seed, and bringing forth of seed is the reference there, and the seed that's come from this wicked seed in a lot of cases, and the fact that the Zara'at that has been visited, well, it was for a long time, but hasn't been seen for centuries. Why? This is at least part of the answer I'm going to suggest. Therefore, I pronounce them unclean. What is it that the Kohen does when he declares them to be, suffering from this malady, this negah? He says they're unclean. They have it. This is Yah. This is the prophet. The words in red saying, I pronounce them unclean because of their ritual gifts. Bunnies and eggs and little balls and gold and silver on the trees. And that they caused all their firstborn to fast through the fire, that I might make them desolate, and that they might know Ki Ani Yahuwah. Now, isn't this funny? If I read the book here in the English, King James Version, people were talking about this just a little while ago, the word Yahuwah, Yah, references there, his name has been taken out. It says Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh in the original Hebrew. What it says here is that I am the Lord. Well, no. That's not what he wants them to know. He said what he wants them to know, that I am Ki Ani Yahuwah. They don't even want the descendants that have had their children passing through the fire and going to the abortion clinics and their little baby parts being sold for goodies. They don't want them to even know that. This is kind of amazing if you think about it. I pronounced them unclean, he says, because of all this nasty stuff they were doing, so that I might make them desolate, and they might know that I am the Lord. Wrong, that I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. They still don't know that. Therefore, son of man, speak to the house of Israel, and say to them, thus says Yahuwah, in this too your fathers have blasphemed me by being unfaithful to me. So when I brought them out of the land, which I had raised my hand in an oath to give them, they saw all the high hills, the thick trees, and they offered their sacrifices. They provoked me with their offerings, and they did all this nasty stuff. Okay? There's a pattern here, in other words, that we're still seeing. Now, what I suggested is I'm gonna talk about what Ezekiel was warning and what, in fact, later happened, that you're doing all this nasty stuff. I don't like it. What's fascinating, of course, is the upshot. I pronounce them unclean. It's the Kohen that pronounces them unclean when they have this. I'll say it this way. Almost it's a gift. This, can you imagine, folks, that we are at the place where I'm going to suggest a plague, a nagah, something that is a malady, is actually a gift? I guess in a lot of respects, if you look and see what's happened in the absence of it, it's kind of hard to argue otherwise, isn't it? We now have so-called leadership that makes a living, that literally makes careers out of being the kinds of things that would have had lepers thrown out of the camp years ago when they didn't even know what leprosy or whatever this thing was. And here we are today where it's uncleanness that masquerades as the government in much of the world, especially in the swamp. They profane my name. And he says this, as for you, O house of Israel, says Yahuwah, go, serve every one of you your stinking idols. I put that word in there, but you get the picture. And hereafter, if you'll not obey me, but in fact instead profane my holy name, well, here's what you got. Profane my holy name no more with your gifts and your idols. Matter of fact, you don't even know my holy name anymore, do you? That's how far gone things are. Okay, so fast forward to Ezekiel chapter 22, one of the places where we're going to see where this leads. Moreover, the word of Yahuwah came to me, saying, son of man, will you now judge the bloody city? Show her her abominations. And I've read this many times. It's so apropos today, but it sets up verse 26 where we're going. Thus says Yahuwah, the city sheds blood in her own midst. The time has come. She makes idols within herself to defile herself. You've become guilty by the blood you shed. You've defiled yourself with the idols. Get the picture. This is literally what we see. You flip on the TV, you see exactly what he's talking about here. I have made you a reproach, therefore, to the nations, and a mockery to all countries. They'll look at your mask-wearing, senile, diaper-faced idiot, and they'll go, you call that a leader? Everybody with a brain knows this guy wasn't elected. Hell, he couldn't get 10 people to fill a high school broom closet. And you claim he's president? I've made you a mockery before all nations. Now you're fixing to go to world war, and instead you got a guy that can't tell which end of the rifle the bullet comes out of. Supposedly an destroyer commander in the U.S. Navy. Good grief! If you haven't been paying attention to the news, folks, this mockery of all countries is almost an understatement nowadays. When you look at what's happened to the once free United States, once projecting military power and strength in the name of a god that they still didn't know, but at least they paid lip service to him. You, he says, this is more, verse 8, you've despised my holy things. You've profaned my Sabbaths. All right. In you, they take bribes to shed blood. Hell, if you're enough of a criminal, you can be president. You can pretend to be transportation secretary. You can invite the aliens to come across the border. You can get your bribes from your communist Chinese masters. In you, men uncover their father's nakedness. They shower with their daughters. In you, they violate women who are set apart during their time of impurity. One commits abomination with his neighbor's wife. Another lewdly defiles his daughter-in-law. And in you, they take bribes to shed blood. He sounds like he's reading the congressional record, for crying out loud. By extortion, they have forgotten me. And behold, therefore, I beat my fists at the dishonest profit which you've made. You print money and you say it's money and it's not. dishonest weights and measures, folks, an abomination. We have made the world's champion effort, the biggest creation of the debt bubble and most honest, well, most dishonest mass of fake money in all of human history. Add at the bloodshed which has been in your midst. Can your hearts endure, your hands remain strong in the days when I will deal with you, says Yahuwah? Okay, well, you get the picture, folks. Again, what's fascinating? Remember, history doesn't repeat exactly, but it rhymes. He was talking to people then. He could be talking to people now, except for one thing. During the time Ezekiel was writing this book and the other prophets were speaking, this Zaraat thing was real. It was there. People that engaged in whatever it was, and of course we'll come back to that in just a second, but whatever it was that caused it, they were shamed. They were openly shamed and they were put outside the camp. They were supposed to yell, "Tame, Tame, I'm unclean, I'm unclean." Imagine all the people yelling that in Washington that were unclean. You couldn't hear yourself think. Of course, you wouldn't think if you were in Washington anyway. You shall defile yourself in the sight of the nations, then you shall know, Ki Ani Yahuwah. Well, they don't know it yet, although they have been pretty much defiled. What's funny is, again, we're leading up to this. And here comes the indictment. Son of man, this is the word of Yahuwah saying, son of man, say to her, meaning the whore here we're dealing with, you're a land that's not cleansed nor rained on in the day of indignation. The conspiracy of her prophets in her midst is like a roaring lion tearing the prey. You've devoured people. They've devoured people. They've taken treasure and precious things. They have made a whole lot of widows in her midst. Here it comes. This is the place where I'm going to suggest all the pieces fit together with what we're talking about today. Her priests, her Kohanim, who is it that's supposed to declare what's clean and unclean? Recognize the Zaraat, answer, the Kohanim. Her Kohanim have violated my Torah and profaned my set-apart things. They have not distinguished between the holy and the unholy, the set-apart, the kadosh, and the antithesis of that, the set-apart because it's profane, nor have they made known, they have not taught the difference, ready, between the tahor and the tameh, between the clean and the unclean. And they have hidden their eyes from my Sabbaths so that I am profaned among them. Can we not see it? Does that not still apply? Is not the creator of the universe and author of Scripture profaned in the swamp? Hell, they don't want any mention of his name. They want to expunge him. They want to expunge everybody that even acknowledged that we were once a nation founded on this concept that there is a God, that he gave us rights. The purpose of government is to secure these rights. That's why governments are instituted among men. Her princes in her midst are like wolves, like little Hunter Bidens here, tearing the prey, shedding blood, doing lines of cocaine and having hooker parties to destroy people to get dishonest gain. But hey, the big guy gets the 50% or 10% or whatever his cut today is off the top. Got to keep Burisma silent and make sure that when we do the money laundering in Ukraine, yeah, we'll send another $60 billion there to keep that covered up. Her princes in her midst are like wolves, tearing the prey to shed blood, to destroy people, to get dishonest gain. That's why 51 so-called intelligence experts and leaders said, we'll sign a letter to make sure that the princes can keep on devouring people, shedding blood, and getting their dishonest gain, and covering our tracks in the process. All right. There is a lot more in here. I encourage you, if you haven't looked at this, read it. But again, the point is, we have two references explicitly in the book of Ezekiel. And it's kind of funny, they're easy to remember. The way I remember it is Ezekiel 22, and look around verse 22, you'll see it. So Ezekiel 22:22, double that, and you get to Ezekiel 44, which is the place we'll go next, and we'll see kind of the counterpoint to that. This is the an admonition to the prince, to the Kohanim, the priests. And essentially what he's talking about are the ones that are going to do his word. The Levites who went far from me when Israel went astray, they strayed from me after idols, those will bear their iniquity. Yep, he says, but on the other hand, they're not going to come near to me. They're not going to minister to me as priests nor come near to my holy things. They shall bear their shame. Bear their shame and the abominations which they have committed. All right. So, not so good for those that fail to do what he said to do. And by the way, today they would be cabinet ministers, or well, no, they'd have to be transgendered and a little bit LGBTQP++ or something. Then they could be cabinet ministers. But on the other hand, there's the good guys, the Levites, the sons of Zadok, who did what they're supposed to. They kept charge of my sanctuary when the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, went astray from me. They are the ones who will be allowed to come near me to minister to me. They shall stand before me to offer to me the fat and the blood, says Yahuwah Eloheka. They'll enter my sanctuary, and it'll be when they enter the gates. Basically, what he's going to lay out is all the good things that they were supposed to do, that they've shown faithfulness to, so they're going to do them. When they go to the outer court, they'll take off their garments which they've ministered, leave them in the holy chambers. He's repeating, essentially, the commandments that were given to the original sons of Aaron, because these are the priests who are walking faithfully. They'll not take a wife who is a divorced woman or a widow. Instead, they take virgins of the descendants of the house of Israel or widows of priests. And, okay, I mentioned that we're going to see this reference to teaching my people the difference. These are the good guys. What are they going to do? They shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the unholy, the kadosh and the not kadosh, literally set apart for a whole different reason. And they shall cause them, who, my people, to discern between the unclean, the tameh, and the tahor, the clean. The priests, who are the ones, remember, that get to declare when something has gotten to the point where it's zara'at, and the person that carries it is a metzora, that's how they discern. They declare it to be clean or unclean. Well, they're supposed to teach, too. They're supposed to teach my people the difference. Well, maybe it makes sense now why there's so much detail in here about just one of the elements of this idea of Zara'at. And we said, well, this is all Old Testament stuff. This is all done away with stuff. I mean, really, we haven't seen this disease in centuries. What do we care about any of this? Answer. Because we live in a place where there's been so little teaching of the difference between the unclean and the clean, you can't put anybody outside of a camp because the camp isn't clean. It's all filthy. Unless we begin to at least discern a little bit of the difference, how are you going to even know what the hell is clean if you ever see it? Because what comes out of the mouths of these people is nothing but Lashon Hara, or lies, the evil tongue, or worse. I'm working up to some, I hope, reasons why we can begin to put our finger on why this Zara'at thing has not been seen, and why it's too bad that we haven't seen it. So, we got this idea. The Kohen is supposed to declare what is clean and what's unclean. He is the one who declares whether it is or is not Zara'at, and the person is clean or is not clean. There are some things, and as Yeshua points out in Matthew chapter 8, when he has a leper, or that's what the English says. No, it's a person that is a metzora. Let's get it right. That comes to him. And that, too, is kind of indicative of what we're seeing. I'll come back to that story in a minute. The point is, the person at least knew enough that when he saw the Torah made flesh, when he saw the Son of Man, when he saw what was going on, he knew to come to him and said, Lord, hey, if it's your will, you can take this away. You can clean me on up. And the answer is, he did. But at least that guy kind of had a clue, I think, more so than, say, anybody in the white whorehouse today about what the difference between clean and unclean is. Priests of Zadok, remember, they were supposed to teach it. So, let's go back and look at some of the specifics here, because I'm going to contend that it's not just about the difference between the Tahor and the Tameh, and the reason that we don't see it today is simply because there's so much of it. Let me ask it as a question. I'll talk about this first. Then I'm going to go to an article that I think will lay out some of the differences. But let's go to chapter... Let's see, where is this? Chapter 13 today. And it's talking about the bald guy. The priest looks upon this bald guy and he makes the decision. Is he or is he not a metzora? If he is a metzora, well then the priest declares him to be so. He is tameh, he's unclean. The priest, it says, the Kohen, shall surely pronounce him unclean. His plague, his negah, is upon his head. Okay, now this person, this metzora, in whom the negah is, he shall rend his clothes, lets the hair of his head go loose. He is to cover his upper lip. I wonder, does he have to put on a mask? You know, one of those little N95 things? Or is it can be a cloth mask to cover his upper lip? And he is to cry, tameh, tameh, unclean, unclean. Now, I've already alluded to this, but I just want to picture the obscenity, the irony of that. Here's a guy that is told, you're now unclean. Understand that. You are a Metzorah. Okay, don't like it, but I guess that's true. Now you're going to go around wearing your rended clothes, covering your upper lip with the little COVID mask or whatever the ancient equivalent was, and then cry, unclean, unclean. Because there's shame upon you that's associated with this. All the days wherein this Negah is upon him, he shall cry, unclean, unclean. He is, in fact, unclean. He shall dwell alone outside of the camp. That's where his dwelling will be. Do you see the irony? Can you imagine telling the Biden-Fuhrer or the Metzora, that is the so-called Department of Homeland Security chief, or the Lloyd Austin, or any of the scumbags that are destroying the U.S. military and that are literally committing acts that would have turned them white as snow and probably had all the skin fall off their bodies a long time ago if we still had this plague? Having them stand around and declare exactly what everybody knows they are, unclean, unclean? I got to admit, I'd love to see it. I think it'd be hilarious. Biden standing alone and walking into walls and stumbling up steps with a mask over his face saying, unclean, unclean. Truth in advertising, but it ain't going to happen. Shouldn't it? I mean, really. If there was ever a person in history, if there were ever a people in history who deserved to be running around shouting, unclean, unclean, wouldn't it be pretty much all of Congress, all of the bureaucracy, most of the Supreme Court, and most of the scumbags that pretending to be military and other bureaucratic leaders and department heads and so-called judges, especially in places like New York, yelling unclean, unclean? All right, well, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to suggest that this is really kind of the title, the main point, and I've asked this question for years, but I'm going to give a slightly different answer. Why is it we don't have Zara'at today? The creator of the universe has promised more than one time and in more than one way, there'll come a time where he will hide his face. He'll just basically say, I've had enough of you. We've alluded to it. I didn't read all of that part of Ezekiel chapters 20 through 22 that lead up, by the way, to 23, where he talks about the whoring wife, the two whoring wives. But you get the idea that he says there's going to come a time where you're just so stinking whoring, I'm going to turn my back on you. I'm going to kick you out first. I'll make you wallow in your own shame. And then I'm going to leave. I'm going to turn my back. You'll holler, but I'm not going to answer. You want those other gods to serve you, to save you? You go ahead. You cry out to them. So that, I think, is a part of the answer. Here's the other part of the answer. And I tried to illustrate it with a disgusting, but not really that humorous example of picturing Mayorkas or Biden or Buttigieg or these other people walking around yelling what they are. Unclean, unclean, tomei, tomei. They have no shame. You see, this is the key. The Metzora who came up to, let's read the story. It's from Matthew chapter 8. It fits now, it fits later too, but I'll do it right now. The Metzora comes up. He comes up, he sees the Messiah there, and he seems to recognize that something special about this fellow. And he says, this is after Yeshua had come down from the mountain. A whole lot of folks followed him. Behold, a Metzora came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me tahor. You can make me clean. Yehoshua put out his hand. He touched him. He touched him. Right? You're not supposed to touch the Metzora. He does. And he says, I'm willing. Be cleansed. Immediately, he was no longer a Metzora. His Zara'at was cleansed. He was clean. What is it that has happened? Now, if you think about it, remember, only the Kohen can declare him to be clean or unclean. Yeshua is kind of a Kohen. He's acting a bit like a Kohen, but no, he's something far beyond that. That's part of what we're seeing here, because he's not following the regular process. He is, in fact, going to tell this guy what he's going to do next, which is to follow the regular process. That's kind of fascinating. But he just simply says, be cleansed. Be cleansed. And then his leprosy, his Zara'at is gone. Now, what we would say is, it looks like he's cleansed, but no Kohen has declared him to be clean, so is he or is he not, right? Yeshua said to him, see that you tell no one, but go on your way, show yourself to the Kohen. What's the Kohen going to say? Oh, you're clean. And offer the gift that Moshe commanded as a testimony to them. So he basically has just essentially showed us kind of the elements that are key to this understanding here. Be cleansed. But what is part and parcel of what is required? What does the Metzora do? He comes up to the one who he recognizes to be who he is, and he says, if you're willing, Lord, you can do it. Make me clean. That's what it takes. Now ask yourself, can you imagine any of these people that wouldn't even, they have no shame? They're not about to stand around yelling, unclean, unclean. I got nothing to be clean for. That's the other guy's problem. How many times have we heard this stuff from these people? It's not my problem. I didn't do it. You guys are the problem. You're the domestic violent extremists. You're the white terrorists. You're whatever it is, you know. We're the ones who are higher than you, more clean than you. We're the virtue signaling masters of the universe. How dare you even suggest we're not so clean? We're so clean in our own eyes, we don't need no stinking God of the Bible to cleanse us. Folks, they have no shame whatsoever. They're not about to yell unclean, unclean, because as far as they're concerned, what the creator of the universe declares to be holy and set apart and clean, it's filthy to them. They are so upside down warped in their thinking, they have no shame. They wouldn't recognize, well, they haven't been taught the difference, but they're going to make damn sure that no one else is allowed to teach the difference. That's why they will cut off your ability to do free speech. See, there's Lashon Hara, the evil tongue, and then there's what they do, which is to say, we're not going to even allow any speech whatsoever. You run afoul of our ministry of truth, we'll silence you. We'll cut your tongue out, literally and figuratively. Matter of fact, we'll take the genitalia off your little boys and girls just so you know who's boss. They have no shame. And what I want to do here is go to I'll go to an article. This is a nice piece. It's very short, and I've had this discussion of late with loved ones and others about a fellow that you may have heard of. If you haven't, this is kind of a nice introduction. This is a famous rabbi, and he's more famous via his pen name, if you will, than he is by his real name. As a matter of fact, the other day I was trying to think of his real name. I couldn't remember it. All I could remember was he's the one they call the Chofetz Chaim. Okay, and the book is sitting right here on the shelf. It's called A Lesson a Day, very famous book. And it's all about what the rabbis say. And by the way, I'm not going to dwell on it as much this time around, but I will touch on some elements so that you can see the point. The rabbis will say the primary cause, when we had it, of Zara'atz was, in fact, the evil tongue. You'll hear the Hebrew word, Lashon Hara, the evil tongue. So it was the evil tongue that got people in this predicament, that got this plague to go upon them. And they make some good cases. Obviously, the primary case is Miriam. And we remember the story. But I think it's interesting, and that's why I want to go through this piece, and I'll stop and I'll talk about some of the Bible stories that go with it as I introduce it. Okay. We've all made mistakes, says this piece from Rabbi, This is the author is a guy named Rabbi Yaakov Menken in this case. We're all human. We make bad decisions. We do things we know we really shouldn't. However, such wrongdoing, when it becomes public acknowledgement, there is extreme embarrassment. That is, if you're not a cabinet minister or a police officer or somebody who basically is above the law or a judge in New York or, you know, you know the point, folks. If you're not a swamp critter, if you're a swamp critter, there's no embarrassment. You just double down and do it, and then you silence the people that dare to point it out. And you take more bribes, and if they point that out, you cut them off, or you fine them $1 billion and take away their radio network. All right. We know cases where people even took their own lives, says the rabbi. Heaven forbid, that's what being publicly shamed can do, or at least what it used to do. You see what he's describing? He's describing a people and an understanding that is scriptural in nature. That's the point of this malady, this negah of Za'arat. People were shamed to have their lying tongue pointed out in public. It's a shame to be caught in a lie. It is shameful to be found doing things that you knew you shouldn't do. Now, on the other hand, today, hell, it's no shame. They'll give you a TV show. People don't take their own lives anymore because they're shamed. They take their own lives because somebody cut off their genitalia, injected them with puberty-blocking drugs. Years later, they figure out they're never going to have kids, and they don't like the fact that God made them one way, and they tried to change it, and it didn't work out so well. So that's the kind of people that mostly take their own lives. Or other people that end up, you can just look at the examples that we have today of high suicide rates, but shame usually isn't at the root. Usually it's something that they've done or had done to them that they realize is irreversible. Okay? This is interesting, though, and I might take an issue with a piece or two of this, but think about it. Ordinarily, says the rabbi, the Torah considers embarrassment of a person to be a crime. They compare it to causing the blood to drain from a person's face. They compare that to actual bloodshed. And it's kind of fascinating. That's an interesting point. In other words, you've ever heard, oh, the blood went out of his face. The blood drained from his body. Not in a physical sense, but in a spiritual sense. And the Torah actually does, evidently, compare that, and certainly the language, the terminology that's used, to actual bloodshed. Usually, says the rabbi, the Torah only punishes persons for actions taken in front of two witnesses. We know that. Let everything be confirmed in the mouth of two or three witnesses. The person who warned the person that the behavior was forbidden, he could only be punished publicly if he was willing to do that evil behavior in front of two witnesses, knowing they were witnessing his crime. What do we got today? We got people that will perform their crimes on national TV, and they'll brag about it. I can't, you know, if I was to just give you a few examples in the last week, it'd take another hour. And you know what I'm talking about. This parsha, though, discusses an exception. Even Miriam, the prophetess, without whose insights her brother Moshe would never have managed to survive, he certainly wouldn't have grown to adulthood, right? She was the one that watched over him while he was in the reeds in the Nile River. And but she eventually made this massive mistake. Okay, we're talking about Numbers chapter 12. I'll go through the story here in just a second. And this is where the rabbis get the idea. And again, I think this is pretty sound. It's one of those things that when I teach it, I'm always careful to say, read it, decide for yourself. Does it ever say explicitly in the Torah, if you commit Lashon Hara, you will become a Metzora? The answer is no. It doesn't. Doesn't say that. But it gives us examples of people who certainly do things that kind of look like that. That happened to. And furthermore, in context, I think the case is really good. So that's how I'm going to leave it. Connect the dots for yourself, see if it fits. Okay? Says this rabbi, Miriam's mistake was speaking Lashon Hara, the evil tongue, of gossip about her brother Moses. Okay, now either you believe that or you don't, but the story says this. This is chapter 12 of the book of Numbers. Miriam and Aaron, that's brother and sister of Moses, they spoke against him because of this Cushite woman whom he had married. He had married, in fact, a Cushite, an Ethiopian woman. Now, without going into the details there, without his second wife probably, I've heard all kinds of examples and arguments about what was it. Was it because of her color? Was it because she was the second wife? Or, in fact, and this is the way I tend to lean, was it because Moshe, in fact, by the way the story kind of bears this out, Moshe wasn't performing his husbandly duties to her the way that they thought he should. He was kind of leaving her to not be satisfied, if you follow my drift. And instead, he was doing all kinds of things on behalf of the camp and going into the tent of meeting and so forth. And they thought, you've taken this woman. You should take better care of her. But we don't know for sure. Let's just leave it at that. It does say the man, Moshe, was very humble, more than all the men on the face of the planet. Suddenly, and that's one of the keys to the reason why I just said what I did. Suddenly, it says, Yahuwah said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, come on out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting. So the implication is that they might not have been ritually pure because they may have been engaged in a little bit of afternoon delight with their respective spouses. And Moses probably hadn't, even though he had one that maybe they thought he should have. But in any case, they came out. Yahuwah came down, a pillar of cloud. He stood there and he called to all of them. They both came forward. Miriam and Aaron came forward. And he said, hear now my words. There's a prophet among you. I, Yahuwah, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in dreams. But you know what? Your brother, Moshe, he is different. Not so with my servant Moshe. He is faithful in all my house. Him I speak with face to face. Plainly, not in dark sayings. He sees the form of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Why then were you not afraid? Now listen to this. Why then were you not afraid to speak out against my servant Moses? There it is. You all should have been afraid to speak out against my... Now that's about as clear as it gets. Well, it says, the anger of Yahuwah was aroused against them, and he departed. Okay, so he's angry, he left. Then, when the cloud departed from above the Mishkan, suddenly, here's Miriam, she became a Metzora. Now, it says became leprous. Now, the answer is, it literally says in the Hebrew, she was now a Metzorat, as white as snow. Something happened to her skin, and it was not necessarily attractive, and it sure as heck didn't look right. We're going to find out how wrong it looked, because Aaron's going to comment on it in just a second. Aaron turned towards Miriam. There she was. She was a Metzora. She had the booga booga zara'at. Aaron then said to Moshe, "Oh, my Lord, please don't lay this sin on us. We've done foolishly, and this thing in which we have sinned." They acknowledge, we got a problem here. Now, that would be a little bit different, right, today? "I didn't do anything wrong. No, that's not me. How dare you suggest that I was taking a bribe? How dare you suggest..." Come on. Aaron at least says, "All right, you caught me. I was wrong, and I know it. Don't let her be as one dead." Here comes the description. This is Aaron looking at his sister Miriam and saying, "Wow, she looks like she's been dead for a week. Oh, man, please do not let her now be as one dead whose flesh is half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb." So Moshe cried out to Yahuwah saying, "Please heal her, O Elohim, I pray." Then, now this is interesting, and this is, I think, another piece of the bigger puzzle that I wanted to try to explore and just ask some questions about it today. Listen to this and see if it doesn't kind of make sense. Then Yahuwah said to Moshe, "Look, if her father had just spit in her face..." What does it say when a father spits in his daughter's face? Is he happy with her? Arguably not so much. All right? So he is saying she deserves something here. If her father had just spit in her face, wouldn't she have been shamed? Shamed for 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp for 7 days. After that, she can be received. So here it is. This is why I'm going to suggest again. We are talking about a reason why it is, and I'm not going to say we know the answer. I'm just going to say, here are some questions. Here's a plausible explanation, okay? Why have we not seen Zara'at for centuries? Well, obviously it wouldn't make much difference to people who have no shame. It did to Miriam. This was written for all time, folks. This is arguably the first major case we see of this in Scripture, of a person being shamed publicly and for all time. "How dare you speak out against my servant Moshe?" It's kind of like, just at minimum, a father spitting in his daughter's face. Isn't that a cause for shame? Shut her outside the camp for 7 days. Okay, she seems to have learned the lesson. So, Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days. People didn't journey on until she was finally brought back in. And after that, they moved. The essence, though, this story tells us so many interesting things about it. She looks like someone who is dead. She's literally walking dead. It horrifies her brother, Aaron, to see her like this. She's shamefully dead-looking. Okay? The answer is, let her be shamed for 7 days. What is the purpose of Zara'at? I think right there we see it. First example in the book. Well, we'll come back to that. Second, kind of. But the first one is interesting, and we know this one as well. It's the first one is where Moses himself sees it, if you remember. And let's see. It's in the book of Exodus. And I think it's chapter 6, if I can find it quickly. But you know the story. It's kind of interesting sometimes to read it precisely. But this is the place where Moses is going to go see the burning bush. And he's asking, you know, "Will you give me a sign?" And the answer is, "Yeah, I got a sign for you. Put your hand inside. You know, do the Napoleon thing with your hand." He pulls it out, and guess what? His hand now has Zara'at. And this is going to be the sign that he is going to show them. Now, what's interesting to me is, what do we know about Pharaoh? Pharaoh's not exactly, "Who is this Yahuwah? I know him not." Pharaoh's not exactly what you call a God-fearing dude, right? At least not yet. As Yoda was once famously quoted as having said, "You will be, you will be." But it's not happened yet. But Moses at least has a sign that he's going to show these people that is exactly the sign we're talking about today. One of the two that he gives them. So that's the first example. The case here where Miriam demonstrates the cause, where she is, at least so far as the Creator tells us directly, she's guilty of something deserving of this, and she gets it. So again, this is where I will contend, one of the places the rabbis get this idea that the cause somebody being a Metzora, suffering from Zara'at, is, in fact, Lashon Hara, the evil tongue. They're to cry, unclean, unclean. Because they have shame. Back to this piece from the rabbi. What he says, remember, she made a mistake, speaking Lashon Hara. That's the topic. At a time when people were on a much higher spiritual level, now maybe this is key. They will claim these people, you know, in the wilderness, they were closer to Elohim. After all, he dwelt among them. Didn't prevent a lot of them from their carcasses falling in the wilderness, now did it. But speaking Lashon Hara caused a blemish to appear on, listen carefully, and we saw this demonstrated in the portion. I read it last night, and I won't repeat it here, but the idea is the blemish appears on one of three main places, either the person's body, specific parts of their body, or on their property, or on his or her house. So, if you think about it, what is it? The covering. It's their covering, right? It's their house. That's the shelter. That's a physical covering for them from the storm and the sun and the rain and the wind. How about their property? Well, the property primarily is their garments. The warp, the woof, the fabric, something they wear to protect their body from what? The elements. It's their covering. Baldness on the head, that's hair, that's kind of a covering. I hadn't thought about the connection with the covering, but all of these things have to do with the covering of a person. What about their skin? That covers your innards, so they don't become your outards. Covering keeps your insides in. It's your skin. That's where the Zara'at, the Negah, the plague attacks. Elohim himself, says the piece here, was testifying to the person's wrongdoing. Think about that. Elohim himself is testifying to the wrongdoing of this person, primarily by something that they spoke. Tongue is a powerful weapon, right? We see all kinds of references to the tongue. It is extremely powerful. By words, the Creator brought the very universe into existence. Our words are powerful. They can bless and curse. Out of the same mouth flow blessing and cursing. My brethren, this should not be so, right? We can quote any number of references to the power of the tongue or the evil tongue to do evil. And I'll mention a couple more things that this piece goes on to talk about. But Elohim himself is testifying to the person's wrongdoing. I guess if he's turned his back on an entire society and he's just said, you're on your own, I'm going to leave you alone. You can just wallow in your filth. You can just espouse these lies all you want. You can kill people with your damn lies and see if I'm going to just do anything except watch and see if anybody figures it out. He is no longer testifying to the evil of the people that are now in positions of power. Isn't that amazing? However, when he did, this often required the person to be exiled from his home neighborhood or maybe to suffer the destruction of his house. All of these could not help but be public knowledge. Shame. Again, the Torah itself tells us. How's this for public shaming about what happened to Miriam? So here is a key and interesting story and paragraph. Lashon Hara, the evil tongue. It can be a private act from one speaker to one listener. Did you know that so-and-so was doing such-and-such with such-and-such? But ultimately, we know what happens with gossip, right? We know what happens with the evil tongue. We know what happens with a little leaven. It leavens the whole lump. It spreads. So it's not exactly as private as it might appear at first. The story is told. Now, I think this was a funny story, or interesting story. A man goes to his rabbi because he has committed a terrible sin. He's committed Lashon Hara. He wants to make up for it. Rabbi tells him, all right, here's what you're going to do. Okay, remember, this is not a Kohen. He can't say clean or unclean. He just says, all right, here's what you're going to do. Go bring me a feather pillow. So the man goes, he gets a feather pillow. Rabbi, in front of him, tears it open, holds it up and shakes it, and lets the wind scatter all the feathers, blowing all over the place. And he says to the man, all right, go and regather each and every single feather. I thought it was a cute story. Makes the point, right? You're the one that started this. You know how far it's spread, what the evil that you've done is. You just go out and gather all those feathers. Maybe you'll finally start to get a clue here. And by the way, I guess along the way, somebody asks him, why are you gathering all those feathers up? Well, I guess maybe the answer is because I committed a shameful act. I'm feeling a little ashamed here, and this is part of my public penance. Okay? There is more, but and I'm not going to emphasize the gossip elements. I encourage folks, if you're inclined, think about it. Again, that book that I mentioned by the rabbi, the Chofetz Chaim, is it's quite an interesting book, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. There have been some times, I would admit, where I think he goes even over the top. For example, if a merchant is a criminal, he's a crook, and he's shafting people, and you tell somebody, don't go to that guy's store because he's a crook and he'll rob you blind, is that Lashon Hara? Okay? And the Chofetz Chaim has a different take than I would, or that people that are shaking their heads here in the room would have, and that is that you got to be careful. In other words, Lashon Hara isn't only things that are untrue. They can be things that are true. Now, here is where I would part, and I think probably if you read the book and study enough of the nuance, it's a little subtle, but his point is similar. To the point where you're protecting somebody from being damaged by warning them that this person will hurt you, I got no problem with warning somebody. It's just akin to the idea of the watchman on the wall blowing the shofar and saying, hey, there's a sword coming upon the land. Take heed and be careful. So if it comes time to say, do I believe, for example, that the Biden Fuhrer is a criminally evil son of a you-know-what who was not elected and who intends to kill lots of people and has demonstrated his intentions by his wicked fruit? Answer is yes. He's a public persona. Is it Lashon Hara to tell people, be afraid, no, be warned about this level of evil? I do not believe so. Okay, so that's not my point. My point is, understand that Lashon Hara is a real thing. The evil tongue is a real thing. There are real effects, real consequences. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, right? Bull. Absolute bull caca. Words can be destructive. What a father says to his son can make that boy a wonderful young man or destroy his life. Don't kid yourself. Likewise, so many other things along these lines. So the power of the tongue is vitally important to understand, and it is interesting, to put it mildly, that we are in a place now, in a land, where the power of the tongue to do evil is literally unbridled. And the only bridling of the tongue is being done by those who, in a truly Orwellian fashion, are rewriting history and destroying what was once called the First Amendment and the right to freedom of assembly, of speech, of worship, to petition the government for a redress of grievance, to have a free press, to speak the truth, to warn. And we're seeing something the exact opposite. Let me give you some examples. Just see if any of these ring a bell. I was debating how much detail to go in, but I think if I just say certain words, you'll get the idea. How about this one? Ever heard these words about something that might kill people? Was intended to kill people? Safe and effective. Everybody know what I'm talking about? You know damn well what I'm talking about. The Zyklon B injection, where they knew damn well that it was going to kill people, cause spontaneous abortions, sterilize women, sterilize men, cause cancers, melanomas, and you name it, folks. If it was going to kill people, they injected them with it, and they're without excuse. They are damnably evil and without excuse. Safe and effective was a damnable lie. How about this? How about the kind of kids that, how about the kind of people that take kids into a school counseling center and say, hey, little Billy, I think the reason why you've got a problem here and why you had an altercation on the schoolyard is because you're really a little girl in a boy's body. How about we give you some puberty-blocking drugs and cut off your little penis before you even know what it's for? And by the way, let's not tell your parents, huh? Is that Lashon Hara, folks? Or is it something that's even more satanically evil than just an evil tongue? It just starts with an evil tongue, and it prevents parents from even knowing about the evil that's being done to their... See, this is the kind of level of evil that I think is... Well, it's of biblical proportions when it comes to mere Lashon Hara. That's where it starts, but it shows what happens when Lashon Hara becomes literally cancerous, as we've seen. It leads to lies to parents. It leads to kidnapping. We have places now, California, that is literally talking about kidnapping kids from their parents so that they can cut off their genitalia and tell their parents, the hell with you, you got no rights to those kids. Those are the state's children. Shut up. And if you don't like it, we'll cut your tongue out. Well, maybe you could kill yourself once we've done it to your kids. And don't think for a second, folks, that there aren't parents that probably are considering that when they see what's been done to their children. How about this? Remember this verse from the Torah? We'll talk about it here not too long. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Not in New York. not in Alabama, not in Georgia, not in Atlanta, not in America with a K. What's a court mostly about? Words? Listening to the law? Understanding? Rightfully dividing the word? I read the part in the book of Ezekiel. You know, what you call law, it's not. It's not in accord with my law. It was supposed to be back when we had a constitution. How about this? And I just saw a story this morning. The better part of 30 barges on the Ohio River have been cut loose. Did you hear this? If you haven't heard this, there's two stories. One is from the Daily Mail. Officials shut down the McKees Rocks Bridge after 23 barges broke free in Pittsburgh, headed downriver, and they're starting to smash into things. They tore up a marina in one place, broke a bunch of boats, and now they're concerned they may just, imagine this, folks. They were told, remember when you were told that what happened in Baltimore was just a sheer coincidence? No, not terrorism. Well, here's Hal Turner's take on it. It looks like an act of terrorism has taken place against the United States. 26 river barges mysteriously, spontaneously, oh so coincidentally, all broke loose on the Ohio River. They're headed downstream towards bridges. Authorities, agencies, police are on alert in multiple districts, jurisdictions, in case the barges hit bridges. And they've halted all traffic on various bridges and shut down a whole bunch of stuff. And six of them reportedly collided with and jammed up against a dam called the Emsworth Dam. There are reports of extensive damage at Peggy's Marina, where they took out some private vessels docked there. The story is ongoing. But don't you dare have any speech about it or suggest that it's terrorism, because it's just another coincidence. It's the third coincidence in just a couple of weeks. What an amazing coincidence. No, it's not terrorism. And by the way, don't you dare call 10 million communist Chinese, MS-13, and other terrorist invaders of military-age males across the southern border. Don't call that an invasion either. Because remember, it ain't nothing till we say what it is. Does that sound familiar? Maybe we're talking about a different kind of Kohanim for a different God. I can't help but think that's the key here. Let's see. Let me do this. Let me pause for a second and ask, at this point, do we have any questions? Because I know that there's a lot on this subject that is kind of fascinating. I mentioned the Chofetz Chaim. I encourage you to, if you're curious, read the book, or at least find it and do a little bit of research. It's an interesting topic, and there is a lot on it. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the elements of this, specifically with respect to the Metzorah, in next week's Torah portion as well. So we're not done with the topic yet. But I want to introduce it with these questions and maybe even a look at an answer. Why have we not seen any of these negat, these plagues, these maladies for so many centuries? Well, it does seem to me like, if you think about it, the idea of people walking around and shouting out to anybody that comes close to them, Tamei, Tamei, don't come near, as if they would admit that they have anything to be ashamed of, when in fact they have no shame. In other words, the reason why there is no Zara'at, I will contend, is because people have no shame. It doesn't work without the concept of shame. If you build an entire society that is based on the idea of calling evil good and good evil, by definition, they have no shame. So what good would a disease, would a plague that shames them before a creator do? A father that spits in his daughter's face, would she not be shamed 7 days? Well, she wouldn't today. We got a guy in the White House that probably not only spits in his daughter's face and she's not shamed, she might have been shamed by the fact that she didn't like showering with daddy when she was a teenager. But beyond that, these people clearly have no shame. Okay, I'm gonna close with just kind of a caution that I think is apropos, and maybe this is illustrative too, because it illustrates a number of elements. And it's, again, it has to do with parallels and evil tongue and some of the masterful stuff that we saw. So let's take a look back and just think for a second about the greatest crime, arguably, in all of human history so far. We may still get the nuclear version of it. But at least so far, it consisted of releasing a bioweapon against a lot of people, scaring the living hell out of them, and then getting them to self-immolate, inject, with something which made the original bioweapon so much more deadly to everybody else and so much more deadly to them. Isn't that clever? Scare them, and then they commit hara-kiri. I'm talking about COVID, the spike protein, the malady, which killed a fraction of 1%, and generally then only those people who were suffering from something else. In other words, it was comorbidities that got them. But wait, once you get millions upon millions, literally a billion people worldwide, maybe more, were said to have succumbed to the Lashon Hara, the propaganda, saying take the poison poke, take the boosters, and they did, and they died. They died of heart attacks, they died of strokes, they died of turbo cancers, they died in traffic accidents when somebody else crossed the center line, they died when an airplane that was piloted by somebody who was forced to take the injection to keep his job may or may not have caused an accident, or maybe they got lucky and another pilot was just able to bring it to the ground. In other words, folks, they killed a hell of a lot of people, tens of millions. There are tens, if not hundreds of millions more that are dead men walking. They don't know it yet. I wonder if their skin will start looking like Zara Ott before it's all over. Oh, well, maybe not. And now they're planning phase two. Part two. This is a piece that I saw from Zero Hedge, published via Armageddon Press. It's called The COVID Propaganda Machine, Your Definitive Guide to What's Next, Bird Flu Terror. All right. And then there are a series of stories. I'll just read some of the headings here. Senator Rand Paul, 15 federal agencies had prior knowledge of the creation of COVID-19. As you know, it was developed in a lab. It was released. It was developed with Peter Daszak and with Tony Fauci and the cooperation of all kinds of other people. They deliberately targeted ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. They made sure people didn't have the information so they could kill more of them, so they could mandate the injections, so they could claim the emergency use authorization was required, because there were no alternatives, and we made damn sure of that. All right, so here is Fox News and Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky. My investigation has recently discovered government officials from no less than 15 federal agencies knew, listen to the date, they knew in 2018. Huh? That's why it was called COVID 2019. They knew when they were going to release it, too. They knew in 2018 that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was trying to create a coronavirus exactly like COVID-19. This is a quote. These officials knew that the Chinese lab was proposing to create a COVID-19-like virus, and not one of these officials revealed the scheme to the public. No Lashon Hara there. In fact, 15 agencies with knowledge of the project have continuously refused to release any information concerning this alarming and dangerous research. They were briefed on the project proposed by Peter Daszak and the Echo Health Alliance and the Wuhan Institute of Technology. The project was called Diffuse, and it proposed to insert a furin cleavage site into a coronavirus to create a novel chimeric virus that would have been shockingly similar to COVID-19. He's been fighting for years, he said, to release the records, tell people what's going on, because guess what? They're doing it again. You've heard about the bird flu. You've heard booga booga. It's coming. H5N1. Maybe there'll be some other variant here. They're working to produce the WHO mandate so that they can produce exactly what they want, mandate vaccine passports worldwide, mandate more masks, mandate more deadly injections. Ultimately, they'll mandate the mark of the beast, folks. The mask of the beast first. Think about it. If there's a modern mark of shame, it should be wearing a mask in your car driving alone. Oh, well. This is from Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican of Iowa, has now uncovered how U.S. Department of Agriculture has spent at least $1 million of taxpayers' money on an ongoing collaboration with the Communist Chinese Party-run Chinese Academy of Sciences, the parent of the Wuhan lab, to see if they can make a, quote, highly pathogenic avian influenza more contagious to mammals. Well, you bet they're using pigs as part of the transition. All right, more and more. But the moral of the story here is real simple. They did it before. They got away with it. They have been emboldened. They have no shame, and they intend to do it again. and they're going to not only do it again, they're going to lie about it again, they're going to cram this stuff down people's throats, they are going to use the evil tongue and the power of Big Brother to force the evil tongue, and they're going to shut up anybody who dares to suggest, don't take the next poison poke, because it'll kill you just like the last one. And I guess what I am hoping that people will recognize here is where we are and what we were supposed to have had is so antithetical. That's the part that fascinates me, and I tend to shake my head and I look back, and I've remarked about this any number of times, right? We hear, oh, this is all Old Testament stuff. This is all old, done away with stuff, no longer relevant to our modern society. Well, you know what, folks? There's truth in that. People who have no shame, it is no longer relevant to even talk about a malady that is designed to shame them into obedience to the one true living God. Because they have no shame and they could care less about that. They would a lot rather serve the prince of this world and those who want them dead and on a slab, and they want their little kids' genitalia cut off, and they want them to eat worms. Which God, I don't know, would you rather serve? There's a clear message here, and it ought to be, but it is probably no more dramatically illustrated than by the claim that this malady doesn't exist anymore. It is totally irrelevant to us. And the fact that it is so totally irrelevant to us has never been more relevant to us. So think about it. All right, with that, I'll just say, do we have any comments or questions? I'm looking at the screen here. So question, I do see this, the word coincidence, as far as I am aware, and I have heard this taught, there is no equivalent to the word coincidence in ancient Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew. It is in the Greek. There's a lot of Greek words that mean luck, because the gods, you know, they were fickle, and they just like to mess with folks. Lashon hara. Okay, so Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is an interesting word. Do we have Lashon Hara in the Torah? I have not tried to look it up. I don't have the search tool that we'll find in the Torah. The Lashon Hara, correct, is evil tongue. Certainly, Hara is a word. You'll find the words individually. But you're correct. If you're asking, does the rabbinic connection exist in the Torah? And that was my point. I hoped I made it clear enough. But if I didn't, apologies. But understand, the connection is one of the text and of the stories. It is not, nowhere in Torah that I'm aware of, trust me, I don't believe it exists, does it say Lashon Hara causes Zara'at, or people become a Metzora because they commit Lashon Hara? So the answer is no. It is not in there as far as I know. You will find it I'm sure it's probably in the Mishnah and in places like that, and in the Zohar and some other places. So yes, you'll do a search, you come up with all kinds of modern Hebrew sites. Okay, so I don't see any other questions there. All right, then let's close in prayer. Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad, Abba, we come before you. We thank you, Father, for your word, for your instruction. We thank you for this chance together. Together we pray that iron would sharpen iron. And that, because you've told us, warned us, we pray that you would give us eyes to see and ears to hear. Your word says that there's a great deception coming. See that we are not deceived. You've warned us in any number of ways. Know the times and the seasons. That's why we talk about the things that are going on and why we try to understand. Because we want to be like the men of Issachar, to know the times and the seasons, to know what we should do as Israel, or as the descendants of Israel. Guide us in all of that, Abba. Help us to be found doing your work through all that lies ahead. Help us to be counted worthy to escape these things that are coming. And Father, we pray, help us to be witnesses. Help us to speak your truth boldly as we ought to. Keep not silent. But we know, too, that there is a narrow path. You've warned us, few there be that find it. That applies to the tongue as well. The tongue can be used for blessing, for edification, for warning, for speaking of the truth, and it can be used for lies and deception and just to hurt and to deceive and to harm and to divide. So we pray that you'd give us discernment there. Help us to be able to discern the tahor from the tamei and understand the things that you're teaching us through these parts, these parashot in your instruction. Guide us through all that lies ahead, Abba. Help us that we would be good and faithful servants unto you. And all of this we ask in your set-apart name. For you are our King, our Savior, our Redeemer, our help in times of trouble. You are Yahuwah Zedeknu, Yahuwah Vitzivenu, Yahuwah Zevuot, our all-sufficient El Shaddai, and we thank you and praise you. Hallelujah. Amen. Let us wrap up the this portion of the teaching today and the Midrash with the Aaronic blessing. Remember that Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak in turn to Aharon and his sons, and say to them, this is how you bless the B'nai Yisrael. Say to them, Yivarekaka Yahuwah Vadishmareka, Yair Yahuwah Panavaleka Vichaneka, Isayahu Penavalecha v'yasim lecha shalom. May Yahuwah bless you and keep you. May Yahuwah make his face to shine upon you. May Yahuwah lift his countenance upon you and give you his shalom. Amen. And thus he said, they shall put Shemi, my name, on the B'nai Yisrael, and I myself shall bless them. And may it be so, folks. Pay attention. There has never been, I don't believe, in all of history, for the most part, certainly not in our lifetimes, a level of deception like we are seeing and like it continues to build into.